Chapter 3. Differentiating Control. Most of our lives in the modern age is spent in the thrall of things that are partially or completely out of our control. We spend our energy wishing for and striving for what we do not have, and rail against our circumstances, failing to appreciate what we do have, and wasting our vitality worrying about things we have absolutely no power to affect. In the first instance, most of our lives is spent in the pursuit of contentment in achieving goals, amassing material possessions, and winning the acclaim of other human beings. Many manuals for success advise their reader to begin by creating a list of what they desire, and to dedicate their time and energy to attaining those desires. An approach that begins in this manner, by placing primacy in the acquisition of things and influence, is destined to cause measures of disappointment. For starters, pinning one's entire purpose in life on the attainment of external objects is bound to cause distress if, for whatever reason, those goals fail to be attained. While one's own effort is commendable and can achieve great things if focused in the right direction, there are many eventualities that can thwart even our noblest endeavors. Another point to bring up here is that goals often wear out their novelty once attained. Luxuries, and pleasure in particular, quickly become stale and ordinary once experienced more than a few times, through the simple mechanism of desensitization through psychological tolerance. As a result, once a goal is achieved, a new one has to take its place, and a new one after that, leading to a cycle that may wind up consuming an entire lifetime, with the individual never feeling fulfilled and content for more than a little while. The other barrier people find to their contentment is hassling themselves over the forces outside of their influence, whether by worrying over the effect they may have or blaming them for their lack of personal fulfillment. It is true that the news is filled with so much negativity, but many allow it to fill them with anxiety and to taint their thoughts. They lay blame on everything from the economy to the government to family, neighbors, and workmates for holding them back from experiencing true satisfaction, whether by preventing their aforementioned attainment of goals or being a burden on their psyche. All of this is not to say that Stoicism discourages the setting and attainment of goals or attempting to change one's circumstances. The early Stoics do preach the superiority of a life of simplicity, but far more important in the philosophy is the realization that external factors are far too unreliable to build one's happiness and self-identity upon. Fulfillment, they realized, has to come from within. The inner sphere is the only one that we have the power to command. The core of finding inner peace lies in the practice of discernment between the things we have control over versus the things we do not have control over. Discontent and unhappiness, according to Stoicism, arise from a lack of this faculty. Both the Enchiridion and the Discourses of Epicurus begin by emphasizing this dichotomy, naming our opinion, aim, desire, and aversion as being within our control, and our body, property, reputation, and office as being outside of it. In other words, we can only count our own thoughts and emotions as wholly within our own power. Later thinkers have added on a third distinction, that of things partially within our control. It would, in fact, be prudent to posit more of a continuous scale of control versus lack of control, on which various things that affect us lie at various points. Working on the examples given by Epictetus, we could grade them thus. Given our vastly increased knowledge of the human brain, we know now that there is an element of our thoughts that is dependent on chemistry. But for the vast majority of psychologically healthy human beings, thoughts and emotions would lie very firmly on the side of things within our control. Our bodies, being a part of ourselves, but even more subject to our physical surroundings, lie on a midpoint between being within and outside of our control. We can affect our reputation by the way we act, but the bulk of it still lies in the minds of others, so it is further toward the side of things we cannot control. And our property and whatever office we hold are further outside of our control still. Stoics put this system in practice by analyzing every input that we process about what is going on around and within us, and ascertaining its position on the scale of control, and apportioning our efforts most heavily in the direction of things that we can control instead of those we cannot. It is the failure to do this that creates a lot of people's frustration with life. By focusing on the things we can control, we are far better able to achieve results. Most people end up jaded and frustrated by expending a great deal of energy and exertion on things they are less able to control, only to achieve little or no effect. This faculty of discernment therefore nips the source of a lot of worry and negative emotion in the bud. The past, which lies at the most extreme end of the things outside of our control, ceases to trouble us, as does the future, which lies only marginally closer to our influence. There is nothing we can do about world events, so they cease to trouble us. We give proportionate attention to things that are closer to home. To vote or run for office brings us some measure of control, but even if local political outcomes turn out against us, we are unperturbed because we knew they were only partially in our influence all along. An even more profound emotional consequence lies in the fact that all that exists in the realm of our minds is the only thing that is closest to our full and complete control. Stoics endeavor to exercise that control to the maximum by keeping careful watch of our internal state and adjusting it when it slides into the negative. At the basest, we acknowledge that we can control how we react to stimuli. All of our negative reactions come because we choose to react in a negative manner. By examining our reactions and quelling the negative ones as they arise, we become inured to the external circumstance and build our inner reserve of peace and happiness. This is the aspect of Stoicism that is closest to the common usage of the term, constancy of emotion regardless of external circumstances. Unlike the Stoicism of general understanding, though, the Stoic is not severe and emotionless. Rather, we are content and at peace. The inner state we want to achieve is well within our reach of command, and we can grasp it regardless of what is going on around us. Another aspect we can control is the management of our expectations and opinions of the outside world. While having goals and ambition is noble and is the driving force of all of the innovation, artistic excellence, and social progress we have seen throughout the years, and most especially within the last couple of centuries, unfulfilled goals are the source of a great deal of unhappiness. As has already been mentioned, circumstances often conspire against the fulfillment of goals, and they simply cannot in themselves hold the key to our happiness. Stoics know, then, to append all expectations with a note that there is a possibility of their not being fulfilled, and that they alone will not be enough to breed satisfaction. There is a tendency in our modern society to engender the belief that there is no such thing as a dream that is too extravagant or too ambitious. This is simply not the case. Far too many people end up with wasted lives and shattered dreams because they believed way too hard in a dream that was too big to succeed, pinning their entire worth on achieving it. The expectations of the Stoic are also tempered by logic and reason. Probability, innate talent, and means are taken into account when building goals. The importance placed on each goal is then apportioned accordingly. And if every goal were to be achieved, then that would be great. Otherwise, should any goals remain outside the Stoic's reach, then there is no disappointment. Expectations were managed, and the goal was never truly important to our inner happiness anyway. A very important realization for the Stoic is that other individuals, while we may exert some influence over them through our communication and actions, lie very firmly on the side of things we cannot control. This affects, in particular, how the Stoic must view their standing in the eyes of others. No matter what, one's happiness cannot lie in what others think of them. This approach is very practical when facing harsh criticism from others. There are two possibilities that lie in being harshly judged. It may be that the judgment is accurate, that the criticizer has pointed out a major flaw in our behavior or our character. If this is the case, then the logical response is gratitude at the person who has offered the criticism, and an earnest effort on our part to rectify the issue. It is also possible that the criticism is false, in which case it is a case of misapprehension or a mere insult meant by the person who has given it to denigrate you or boost their own ego. If it is an innocent case of misunderstanding, the other person is deserving of help in understanding the truth, to the extent that they do wish to understand it in any case. In the case of a malicious insult or someone being unwilling to learn the truth, it is prudent to simply ignore the barb. There is nothing you or any other person can do to correct someone who is simply out to tear down. The deliverer of the insult is deserving of no riposte or reaction but pity, and it is enough to refuse to sink to the same base level as they have lowered themselves to. It is a simple fact that control over one's body is far from absolute. The body is a physical object, subject to the vagaries of the outside world. Even beyond the base of physical traumas we may be subjected to is the prevalence of all kinds of disease, some caused by outside agents, some by malfunctions arising in or coded into our very own genes. And yet, of all physical objects, our body is the one we have the most control over. Hence, it serves as the perfect archetype for those things that lie partially within our control. How we react to physical malady is dictated by how we react to other occurrences that are outside our control, with indifference, as it is something not in our sphere of influence. To quote Epictetus, sickness is an impediment to the body, but not to the will, unless it itself pleases. We can control our mental state with respect to illness, but we cannot prevent it from having happened in the first place. What we can do, however, is to undertake measures and perform actions, both physical and mental, that reduce the likelihood of illness overtaking us in the future. Medical science has discovered that a very large proportion of our immune response is dependent on our mental and psychological state. A positive outlook is highly conducive to healing and to preventing sickness. A great deal continues to be learned about the placebo effect, how patients who receive an inert sugar pill recover from illness at a far faster rate than if they had received nothing, as long as they believe they are receiving an active dose of medicine. As we continue to delve into this fascinating phenomenon, we have learned that the deception is not particularly necessary for a positive effect to be felt. It is simply the belief that healing is coming that causes it. A healthy, positive emotional state in general is also advantageous in avoidance of illness, and in this, the Stoic is already at an advantage. The sickness itself is outside our sphere of control, so we need not expend effort worrying about it, nor do we allow it to alter our internal balance towards the negative. Add to this that in practicing these techniques in our everyday life, we already have a positive outlook, and Stoics will generally live a life that is healthier and less prone to illness. We are also capable of controlling our own actions and can affect our probability of contracting illness greatly in that way. We know that there are certain foods and activities we must avoid in order to avoid lifestyle illnesses such as cancer, heart disease, and diabetes, and we do so to the best of our ability and within the bounds of our circumstances. Practicing safe sexual intercourse, refraining from making disreputable acquaintances, ensuring there is as little that can cause us injury in our environment and immediate surroundings, all are within our power, and it is wise to exercise them. Should ill health befall us even despite these efforts, then it is the result of factors that truly were out of our control, and we can be at peace knowing there really was nothing we could do to prevent it.